Hey, football fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
At Ritual, we know what goes into the holiday season. The potluck planning, the gift giving, the spreadsheets. So this new year, take a moment for yourself with science-backed support that puts you first. So whether you're focusing on supporting foundational health with a clean vegan multivitamin or supporting your gut health with Symbiotic Plus, do it with 30% off your first month at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hello, and thank you so much for joining us for your ROH and TNA post-show. They have quite an episode to talk about on the other end of this, but we've got ROH 100 to talk about over here. Lots of main roster crossover, a little bit of extra love. It felt like paid attention maybe today, but probably still a little weird for people's travel schedules with the weather that we've got, but plenty to talk about on this episode. Get in those super chats. Leave a thumbs up on this video if you would, more than any other show. We need it. We love it here. Thank you so much. And please do subscribe to our YouTube channel as well. We're closing in on 124,000 followers or subscribers rather to this channel. So a lot of love for a lot of the interviews that we get, and it's more the notifications for your post shows that you know are on because you watch wrestling too, but we do appreciate it. It really does help us out quite a bit. And we'll, of course, remind you to subscribe to FightfulSelect.com. A lot of confusion about who's got the scoops. I'll tell you who's got the scoops. We've got the scoops. Other people might be sneaking them, but they start here a lot of the times. And if they don't, we give proper credit. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. But earlier, the news about Corey Graves returning to the NXT announce desk was scooped by our own Corey Brennan, who was here, along with some other NXT scoops, like Jordan Grace being backstage, which is very cool. And plenty of other stuff, a lot more on the Ricky Starks front as well. Sean had reported a while ago about him not being one to turn down creative, and the news that he requested his release came out as well. So plenty going on at FightfulSelect.com. Only more to come with Royal Rumble season being around the corner and Revolution and Grand Slam Australia, which started to take a little bit more shape yesterday on AEW Dynamite. Nice to see kind of a more evenly paced build. I think we still got 3 more Dynamites until then. So some good stuff happening there. So go ahead and subscribe to FightfulSelect.com. Best $6 in the biz coming up. But I'm joined, as always, by the honored 100 SP3 over here. SP3, how you doing?
I am doing well. I am very honored to be here on this honorable show of the honorable ring for the honorable 100. Yes, yes, we're gonna shake.
It's so hard to do the mirror. I only know how to do that because of touching tips. I only have a sense of direction because of touching tips. But
I was much better with the direction wise when I was in the UK. I'm going back. I hate it in America now. It's weird, but
it's all reversed. It all went the other way.
I'm so used to talking to Kate at like 2 a.m. in the morning. Talking to her at 9 p.m. just feels way too normal. So I think I just got up.
Yeah.
Feels way too normal. So I think I'm going to go back to that 2 a.m.
Go wreck your sleep schedule.
When you got less rants, because I can't scream when my kids are asleep.
I think the most impressive was reviewing an ROH pay-per-view show when you were in the UK. That was crazy because about halfway through, I was like, oh my God, the sun's going to be coming up for him in like an hour. Like it clicked in how stark the time change is. But we got some love from Taylor Cannon saying, hello, Kate and SP3. Hope you are both having a good day. Always enjoy watching you guys together on post shows. Oh. I love streaming with SP3. It's easy. It's fun. We have a great time, even when the shows are not necessarily the best. But I am having a great day because I found out my sister's dog does not have cancer after we thought she did. So great news. That's coming great. In there. I got a new TV yesterday. I'm having a good little week. How's your day, SP3? Let's talk.
My day was pleasant. It was pleasant. I worked this morning. I did AE Ramble with Jimmy McAram, who did not like Dynamite as much as I did, but we weren't too far off. But
yeah, I thought it was an interesting episode yesterday.
We did agree on the stuff that is not working, which is we've put it down to just Jeff Jarrett and the Def Riders. That's not.
I would say everybody is kind of. Though I will say this, I talked with Alex Pulowski yesterday. I was on the Dynamite post show because Sean was getting ready for Vegas. But I was talking with Alex and we got that like hint of Adam Page and MJF intertwining. And he was like, it would be very cool if we got this angle where Adam Page, and I think this could be where it's going, accidentally retires Christopher Daniels and MJF intentionally retires Jeff Jarrett, and Adam Page feels guilt and MJF does not. And that's the beginning of like a Hangman redemption arc. I was like, that would be awesome all day for and that.
That's great because everything is interwoven because Page feuded with Jeff Jarrett. And he was about to do what MJF could possibly do if it wasn't for Switchblade and the rest of the Bang Bang Gang. He would have done that in at Grand Slam. But I would love that. I think that we did see the start of Hangman turning babyface. That was one of my favorite parts. But the show peaked with Harley Cameron. I was almost in tears. I love
this. Oh my God. She's so brilliant.
Oh my God, man. This is amazing. This is the best segment Mercedes bitted since her debut.
Mercedes with the NAR too killed me. Because she has such a cadence to how she talks because she's the CEO. I was in stitches. But let's dig into this episode of ROH. We'll kick around some more AEW as it weaves in. It tends to do that sometimes. But this does kick off with something I thought we'd be getting a little bit more of this episode, which was a promo from Mark Briscoe congratulating ROH on 100 episodes. I thought we might get a few more of those, but I mean, like we get one from Jericho later and I'm like, well, you're the champ. So, but they have so many ROH alum and legends on their own roster that it feels like an easy get. But also last week they thought it was episode 100 for half the episode. So I don't think they're really like keeping too much track. Also,
hey, we got three on the show. At least
we did. Oh, yeah, we did get three, didn't we, actually?
Yeah.
My bad. I left one out. We got the most important one is the one exactly. that I left out. But we'll talk about that in a minute. This was a nice way to open it, though. It kind of set the tone for everything. And I thought that was nice. Mark Briscoe, I mean, you do the best impression of him. I don't even know why I'm still talking. Like,
he's like, I'm just here to say happy birthday to Ring of Honor for the 100th episode of Ring of Honor TV show on Honor Club. I was there on the first episode and I was facing Slim J and I beat him. I beat him for my kids. You know, I got a bunch of kids. I got as many kids as I got gray hair. I got a lot of salt. Got a lot of salt in my beard. Got a lot of salt in my beard. And that's what we do.
You are simply
them boys.
You're like a couple missing teeth away from just really being embodying the whole spirit of Mark Briscoe. But I do like that we had like a guy who was there on day one, and we're going to talk about we do get Athena's or later in this episode where she just cuts a promo celebrating the 100th episode and says that she's going to be back soon, which is good. So I like that we have the most successful champ who's a current champion and really carrying the show as well as like a day one guy. That felt like a nice balance to have. Jericho congratulating on 100 episodes in the reboot is just like, I will never, despite him being a two-time champion, I feel no attachment between Chris Jericho and ROH. Like I just don't. Mostly because this is the most we've had our champion on the show, honestly, for Like, at least he's doing the work to put in vignettes. But, like, I just don't. Of all the people on the AEW roster, there's got to be at least 20 that I equate with this brand more before him, despite the fact that he's a two-time champion. So that was the only thing with that. But I was happy that the most successful champion in the history of the promotion, Athena, was featured in the light that she should be. So good stuff there.
The only person missing, I would have liked bearded Eddie Kingston to send us a video from his couch.
That would have been excellent.
That would have been great. I understand not Claudio. Claudio would be the other person, but I understand not Claudio based on what's his storyline in AEW.
Sure, I would have thought Joe. That was my big one, was like Samoa Joe.
Yeah, that's also true. Samoa Joe.
So, but we do get to also see later in this episode Adam Cole, which is another person that feels like of a specific ROH period. So they did a decent enough job with that, but thank you for tuning in. Over about 2,300 of you tuned in across platforms right now. Please do leave a thumbs up. We are getting into this episode. So much on the TNA side to talk about with Joel and Cresta as well when they come on here. They've got Fraxium defending their NXT title against the Rascals, which I can't imagine is going to be anything other than brilliant. And also, it sounds like it's Josh Alexander's last appearance. So they have a ton to discuss along with this deepening relationship with WWE. But let's dig into this. Let's talk about our ROH World TV Championship match. Commander beating QT Marshall with the Cielito Lindo press. That's the best you're going to get from
Cielito, me. Cielito Lindo or something like that.
I am as white as they get. So I'm sorry. I always feel so bad for Luis, our moderator. He speaks Spanish so beautifully. And
he must be so disappointed.
He's got me being like, Los Garzas on Friday nights. Like, I feel so bad for him. But Lee Johnson comes out after on the ramp, and he calls his TV title shot. I think he might be the only guy in the men's singles division. I really do. And I think he's half of a tag team. So I don't really know. He's challenged for both titles before. It seems like they don't build anybody else up. I'm excited for the actual match between Commander and him. Like, I'm excited to see what the mix of styles looks like, because I think Commander works really well with someone like Lee. So I'm excited to see how that goes. But thought we were on this Lee J kind of trajectory a little bit. So not sure if that'll come into play in all of this, but we really will see. But a fun match. That was a good way to start the show.
It really feels like when plans change in AEW, it trickles down to us in ROH, because this feels like a change in plans, even if it's just a 1 week thing of Lee versus Commander, which we're getting next week, which it was nice to have some kind of relatively big matches announced a week in advance. But I believe that's a proving ground. So it might be we're actually developed some type of feud between the two men. But this does feel like a change of plans, because, like, yeah, EJ and Duka and Lee Johnson, they just did their heel turn at Final Battle, and they did the follow-up with Serpentico at Hammerstein Ballroom. Gates of Agony, kind of like, it was like a double turn where they turned babyface, and they've not really been on Ring of Honor TV since then. Now they're on AEW TV. They were on ROH TV tonight, so they're going to be on Collision on Saturday. But that felt, even their appearance tonight didn't feel like it was a continuation of what happened at Final Battle. It felt like it was setting up what's happening on Saturday more than it was doing anything involving ROH TV. So a lot of this is weird. But Commander and QT Marshall, I thought they had a fun little matchup. QT is just a great base for a guy like Commander. And then QT just throwing around Commander and showing off a little bit of his offense was always fun. I like the finish, getting Alex Albarrantes involved, even though I was rooting for QT to punch him, because I was like, why are you even here? Wait, what are you doing? But I like the finish with the two destroyers into the Cielito Lindo press.
Nailed it. That sounds great to me. How you said it, I'll take it. But I agree with you. This was a fun, like, first of all, QT is in excellent shape. He has been working on his conditioning for sure. He looks great, but he is excellent at basing for guys like Commander, because he knows, I think he's really good at making them look great while still making himself look really good. And I feel like people that have to base for luchadors, sometimes that's where they struggle, is they can do one or the other. Like, so I was surprised this wasn't the main event because it was a title match, but I do understand it based on kind of where we're going with that, I think. But we will get there. Guys, keep those super chats coming. Leave a thumbs up as we continue down the road here. Let's actually talk about this Katsuyori Shibata versus Shane Taylor matchup. Trish Adore, Sean Dean, Carly Bravo, and Lee Moriarty are there. Shibata wins with the penalty kick, but STP after the match attacking Shibata and Taylor hitting that knee strike. Oh boy. And Garcia and the Undisputed Kingdom come out, which to your point, setting up something for Saturday that was already announced. So at least they reversed engineered properly. It just doesn't feel like they're following through with what they engineered to. But after the interference, Don Callis and your international champion, Konosuke Takeshita, call out Shibata for AEW Collision Homecoming. And that's how we close the show. Don't want to see Shane Taylor Promotions taking losses. I just don't. Like, you cannot... It's giving TMDK. It's giving a group that Kate is so excited about that they're like, you know what, though? We just have to make the booking not make sense with what they're saying at all. Like, it's, I get this, but at the same time, I'm like, when you present somebody as a unit or you have the opportunity to present someone as a unit and you don't follow through with it, with Shane Taylor leading the way, especially, I get very frustrated by that because all you have to do is give them some wins. One of them already has gold. You could very easily make an infantry pit stop to get a tag title and Shane Taylor just being the king of it all. Easy peasy. I don't know if he, he's called for title shots multiple times and not gotten them. So I don't know what the deal is. I'm sure before he enters the title picture, they're probably going to make sure he's going to win. I think you have to at this point with that. But all you have to do is give them some W's, man. Like, we saw them win last week. We saw Trish Adora win last week, and that was great. But, I mean, losing to Shibata with the penalty kick when you're Shane Taylor feels not great. No shade at Shibata, but he's up there in age, and you have the chance to do something really special with the supergroup. Do something special with the supergroup.
You see, like, before we started this this podcast, Kate, I was like, I don't know how I feel about tonight's episode. And as you were going through everything and talking about the main event and then the cliffhanger ending, which I did like it after I watched it. But I think that was why I had the feeling of, like, the last half hour before we did this show, I was like, I don't know how I feel about that episode. You know why? That was Rampage. That wasn't Ring of Honor. It hit me while you was talking. I was like, they were just setting up Collision. That's all they were doing on this show. This show was not Ring of Honor. This show was just like, they had the one thing Rampage would usually follow up from the previous Rampage, like ergo a Leo Rush versus Commander that they did a couple of months ago, where they only did a couple of matches on Rampage. That was QT Marshall versus Commander. And then everything else pretty much on this show was basically facilitating probably people that are going to be doing jobs on Collision. Taya Valkyrie. Kasatori Shibata against Takeshita, Gates of Agony against the Hounds of Hell. Like, yo, like, look at this show as we go through the show and just pinpoint and then remember this episode when we watch the next couple of Collisions. And I guarantee you the people that won on this episode are probably losing on a future episode of Collision.
They only lose on Collision. They're like Collision enhancement talent, and it breaks my heart when that's the case. It's awesome they get TV reps. Like, I love that for them. But it also creates this split universe. This is something NXT has really cleaned up, actually, is like they had the same thing where everybody had split personalities. You were heel on one show, you were face on the other, you were winning on one show, you're losing on the other. And not quality losses either, right? We're not talking quality losses. So I am trying to be aware of the fact that, like, they probably were short-staffed on some talent. It certainly felt like yesterday maybe the hair and makeup person didn't make it in based on Wheeler Yuta's.
Man, Wheeler Yuta. Is it
Sheepdog
more
Wheeler.
than you bargained for yet? But yeah, the main event itself with Shane Taylor and Shibata, I thought was a hard-hitting, solid matchup. I like the post-match as far as like this being a 100th show. You got the former Pure Champion,
yes,
Daniel Garcia, coming out. You got Undisputed Kingdom with all them being former ROH World Champions. Adam Cole, he won the TV title. I know Roddy's won all the titles in Ring of Honor. Kyle O'Reilly, he's been tag team champion in the past. So it was nice to see those guys. But I watched that segment and I was just like, yeah, this would have been great if last week was the 100 episode and this was last week, because then that plays in nicely to what we saw on Collision last week, which was Undisputed Kingdom beating Shane Taylor Promotions. Then we could just neatly have this being a bad week for Shane Taylor Promotions, not back-to-back weeks of them having bad weeks.
Exactly. And like losing to main roster talent that is like still in their prime kind of feels a little bit different than randomly Shibata on ROH, but match was good. They just got to stop. It's a pattern of booking too. It's like Shane Taylor looking really cool, seeming really cool. And then what, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
I feel like we just saw the future of the show for a little bit. At least until whatever they're doing with the TV deal is, I think it's going to serve as like part Rampage.
I don't want to review Rampage SP3. I really don't. I really don't.
I hate to be the one to be like, I feel like that's my job in like wrestling media.
Is to hurt my feelings?
No, I'm the one that says the uncomfortable stuff that we all notice, but no one's saying. That's my job.
Well, I didn't notice that. Now I do. And now I don't like you very much, but we'll move on. Me, Norm is saying, as the SGS meat commander, I have no love for birds, so it's wing night at the meat castle. Now let's crank. How was ROH tonight? Also, thank you, Netflix. Yeah, we thank you, Netflix, for our dear concept of streaming and for taking a risk on WWE. For if you had not, certainly nobody else would be broadcasting wrestling in any way, shape, or form. So thank you, Netflix. ROH tonight was... There was like pageantry around an average episode. I'll put it that way. Like, it was really fun to see Cole and Danny Garcia come out and things like that. It was cool to see Deonna Purrazzo on this brand again. But like, it didn't feel like necessarily a ton advanced in ROH world. So there you go. Yeah. But we kick off the show with Layla Gray beating Marti Bell with the Dragon Sleeper. She's going to get a title shot against Red Velvet for her one victory of the year, which, all right. I'm wondering what's going on, because we had something with Layla Hirsch set up and they don't seem to be looping back around to that. This also, I'm not kidding when I tell you, there was like a lot of travel issues over the course of this sprint of taping. So they might just be setting, like they might be doing Lee Johnson versus Commander because they were setting up a TV match and that person couldn't make it that day and whatever. So I don't know what's affected by what. I like Layla Gray. I am impressed by her tenacity that she's like going to the New Japan Dojo this early in her career and stuff. And this is what the TV title should be for. It should be helping that lower and mid card come alive with more frequent defenses on a workhorse title, in my opinion. And I also just want to see some very competitive matches for Red Velvet at some point in the more near future, but this is fine. Like on a TV, not building to a pay-per-view yet. So why not? Let's give Layla Gray a shot. I would just like wins to lead into that instead of win to lead into that, but it's early in the year. You only had so many weeks of television. It's only January 23rd. So who am I to say, but she has a lot of upside. She really shines on screen. So if her wrestling can keep growing, I think she's going to be a really great asset to AEW. Any love for this promo and the matchup we're getting?
I'm fine with the promo. I do agree. You do need more than one win to get a title shot, Jeff Jarrett. I mean, Layla Gray. But I did not like this match. The match was it was not good. There was a lot of they just weren't on the same page. And I like Layla Gray, and I've seen the improvement in her. And I like Marty Bell, and I've seen the improvement in her over time. But they just didn't seem like they were on the same page here. I'm willing to give see what Layla Gray can do against Red Velvet and how Red Velvet handles that type of opportunity, because it feels like she's kind of the kind of. Have to lead that matchup for them. So I think that's going to be a good test for Red Velvet there. So I'm looking forward to it.
I agree with you with the match itself. It did feel like they were just like a step off or not speaking the same language in there. Yeah. I'm a big Marty Bell fan. I love the Hex. I wish that there was a tag division between brands here for the women, because there's so many great women not being used, Deonna Purrazzo. But I do think that, yeah, it was just one of those things. I couldn't even really quite like pick up what was wrong, but it just felt like one of those chemistry things where it was just like, just not clicking, just not super clicking in on things, but it is what it is. They'll move on and have great matches down the line. It's fine. So not the best, not the worst, but yeah. This gets Layla Gray to a title match. So we'll see how that goes, but let's move on to, what should we talk about next? Looking at this episode, I was like, for episode 100. Let's talk about this next. Jack Jameson is backstage with Griff Garrison, Cole Carter, and Preston Vance, where he wants a faction called the Fraternity, mostly because these guys are so swollen, not necessarily on the side of wearing shirts all the time. I'll put it, they are not, if I looked like that, I'd be running around a sports bra everywhere. So God bless him. If I had abs and arms like that, if people were like, do you have a license for those, ma'am? I would be like doing the same thing. But Garrison, Carter, and Vance kind of look at each other and are like, well, no, but we'll think about it kind of thing.
It's like, we should beat him up. No, we should listen to what he offers and then beat him up if we don't like it. Yeah, that's really good. This was like, I was like, these guys share a brain. I'm pretty sure they shared a brain, and that gave them the ability to speak. They each passed it around. It was like a baton, like when you're in camp and you need the stick to talk. That was their brain that they were passing around as they came to that coherent thought of listening to Jack Jameson before they turned him down.
I was just like, are the Iron Savages a part of this? It was very, for a while considering how much they didn't say. Like, this was a pretty long promo considering it was basically like.
Wasn't a lot.
Hey, we're all bros. We should start a faction called the Fraternity. It was basically what it was. I don't know. I don't know about this. It feels like toxic masculinity personified. That's how it feels.
I'll give you the translation of what they were trying to say. I'm a dude. He's a dude. She's a dude. And we're all dudes. Hey, I'm a dude. She's a dude. He's a dude. Because we're all dudes. Hey.
Nailed it. Nailed it. Nailed it. Nailed it. I will leave the window open for them to win me over. I do think the three guys that were standing there need something. Need a mouthpiece, need a common thread, need something, because they're all kind of just floating around and none of them have ever felt particularly super comfortable mic wise. So if Jack Jameson's the answer, that's cool. Is he not with Iron Savages anymore?
Yeah, that's what I want to know. Is Iron Savages done? Because it feels like this is like the slow breakdown of Iron Savages, because we had all three Iron Savages. Then we had Jess Boulder for a couple of weeks. And then he had that weird 8-man tag where he was with two other tag teams. And now we got just Jack Jameson trying to recruit other people. So is Boulder and Bronson not here anymore? Are they moving on their own? Are they just going to be the Iron Savages? Is Jack Jameson managing the Iron Savages and the Fraternity? What is going on? I just need answers. And where's Stokely Hathaway? That has nothing to do with what I just said. But I want to know where's Stokely Hathaway.
I wonder if they turn on Jack Jameson and the Iron Savages come to his defense, but then they're like, oh, why would you betray us kind of thing. As far as Stokely, we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, I think
Stokely should return and recruit Private Party because he was right all along.
Oh, okay.
They needed him.
Not mad about that. I could see some really fun promo work between him and MVP too, going at it. Yeah. That could get really fun because they both are very good at walking the line between being, you can take them seriously, but you can still laugh along with them. They're both very good at that. So that could be very fun. Well, we had a Lord Crew chant. How about that shit on television here? The Beast Mortos picking up the win against Lord Crew with the Destination Hellhole, one of the coolest names for something in the whole wide world. Not a lot to say here. It was fun hearing a Lord Crew chant, though. That was fun. And Beast Mortos he's such a special avenue that's all his own. And I feel like with Penta departing for WWE, having someone like him around is good because I feel like he, not that he fills the same holes that Penta left, but like he's a luchador that can base well for other people, but also holds his own as a singles. So like, I think that's really, really good. Like you want diversity within your lucha roster. And I think Beast Mortos offers something that is like so special in his own in their current landscape. So I really, really like that. And also,
attorney at RAR. yes, Frank Mortos, attorney at RAR. I am always happy to see him on my television. We need more of him. If we're not going to see him on AEW TV, he better sure be on ROH TV. So I was happy to see him here. Happy to see Lord Crew get the opportunity here. Him and his significant other on this episode here. So
that's right.
A lot of fun to see. So love them getting the opportunity. And it was a pretty decent affair here. And Beast Mortos picking up the win. But this feels like once again, this was another matchup that just made me feel like, am I watching Ring of Honor? Or am I watching Rampage? Is Beast Mortos about to job on Collision to a star? Because that's usually how this goes, how the equation goes.
Is this Ramp of Honor?
Ramp of Honor. There we go. Rampage of Honor.
I'm so mad at you for pointing that out because it's accurate. Breaks my heart. Well,
I mean, look at the bright side. This is an improvement on Dark. We were ROH Dark for a long time. So I mean, we're at least evolving.
We're moving up to the main roster anytime now to the proper shows, but let's keep moving along here. Guys, please leave a thumbs up. Almost 4,000 of you tuned in now, so thank you so much for the support. Reminder to subscribe to Fightful Select if you're not subscribed as well. I told you about some scoop skis at the beginning of this show. Sean had that Christopher Daniels scoop as well, that it was his retirement match. But there's plenty of other value behind the paywall as well. That Ask SRS channel is something I always talk about because I think it's pretty cool that if you ask Sean a question, he'll get you the answer. You can just kind of have like Sean on demand, which is pretty neat. So the Ask SRS channel in the Discord and his backstage Q&A show is something that I think is an underrated and very valuable thing. But plenty of fun to be had behind the paywall.
Question for you.
Sure.
Who's your Mount Rushmore Christopher Daniels opponent?
Oh, God. That's a really good question.
I have three on the Mount Rushmore. It could technically be four, but I feel like the third option needs to share a head. It would be Styles.
Sure.
Joe. The Young Bucks.
Ooh, okay. Okay. Yeah, I feel like you're right. I feel like the Young Bucks are like it's the Mount Rushmore of acts that he's faced.
Yeah.
Who would the fourth be? Those were the exact three that I was like,
yeah, immediately came to mind. You think of Daniel's career, those are the three opponents that you would think of
immediately. Jump to, yeah, kind of immediately. Yeah. I'm trying to think. Because I was not the biggest TNA watcher too.
Yeah, I'm like trying to think of like his TNA run. The most I remember is just him and Styles
a lot, and it was great.
It was always, they always went back to it. Like I even like the stuff that I was like, okay, think of an opponent outside of Styles, and I thought of LAX, and I was like, that's him and AJ Styles versus LAX.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, that's so funny. Danielson's probably the number four, right?
Hey, football fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get tender USDA choice boneless chuck roast or stew meat for $6.99 a pound. Then get 2 liter bottles of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $1.49 each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I would say a good shout that I just thought of, America's Most Wanted, XXX and America's Most Wanted.
Oh yeah, that sounds good. That sounds good.
Yeah,
I'll take it.
Daniels is a good shout. I just don't like think they had one of those like iconic Ring of Honor
proper
matches.
Rivalries.
Yeah, proper rivalries. Their most known, their most like notable matchup in Ring of Honor is the first ever main event. And that's right. it was a triple threat four way. So it's like it doesn't like make that as like memorable as it should be. Yeah,
it's also just an easy cop out to say Danielson. If he is probably on every Mount Rushmore for people's opponents, but America's Most Wanted. Yeah, Greg Carter saying the same thing. That's a good question. I like that question. Yeah, that's funny. I of course like immediately went to the same ones that you did. But we've been talking about the Vendetta quite a bit tonight. Let's talk about Taya Valkyrie, who has Deonna Purrazzo out there, defeating Miss Lady Frost with the Shania Payne. Good stuff. Really good stuff. Nice to see Lady Frost in action. Taya's great. And I cannot stress this enough, the fuck are we doing with this? We don't have a sponsor tonight. I'm not in the monetization window. I don't use the F word often, but I'm cashing in my big oh fudge F word on this one because we had weeks of vignettes with no matches with these two. We had Deonna losing in her hometown to Anna Jay. We had Deonna losing again. I think she picked up one win. I can't even remember who it was against, but she had lost to Toni Storm. This is such a cool act. Such a cool act. And they're doing nothing with it. With Deonna, why is there a single company that can just, I guess TNA did, but there's just a ceiling on what TNA can realistically do a little bit. Like, how do you not look at this woman and be like, she's a star, one of the best in-ring performers, that a man or a woman that we have, and not use her to her fullest potential? I don't get it. I don't get it. She's so damn good. She's like in my top five women in the company, probably. And that includes a pretty damn good list of women's wrestlers in this company. I don't get it. So I was like excited to see them because I love them, but I am so frustrated by the lack of screen time for them on the main roster. I find it ridiculous and, quite frankly, kind of insulting. Like, there is no reason you roll out 6 weeks of vignettes for someone for an act and then you don't do anything with them. I don't get it. I don't understand it. The chat agrees. Give me Mercedes versus Deonna. Deonna rules. I don't know. I don't know what the deal is, but they should both be wrestling way more because Ty is great too. She has like this, she does a really good job at complimenting Deonna without feeling like she's less than equal to her, if that makes sense. Like she's, it doesn't feel like she's number two in the act, but she has a really good way of like seeing where Deonna's going and working right with her on where she's at, like in promos and stuff. I really like her a lot. So I was excited for this match. It was great. It was nice to see Lady Frost. I'm a big Lady Frost fan, but it just made me so frustrated because it blows my mind that you had Mercedes and Deonna come in a couple months apart and Deonna is fantastic in the ring and feels like such an afterthought in this division. Very frustrating for me. But this match was good.
I like just was like clapping in my head at what you were saying because I just thought about it. I was like, the Vendetta in a nutshell, like if any of like named female stars in pro wrestling become a free agent and they're thinking about signing with Tony Khan, just look at the Vendetta. That literally they are like the prototypical arc of a Tony Khan name value like signing that isn't like a main event star but is someone that earned their name outside of AEW that comes in that you think can fit a role or can be a champion in AEW. And what do? Taya Valkyrie comes in 2023. They give her a bunch of wins to set her up to face Jade Cargill. She loses to Jade Cargill at Double or Nothing. She's never used properly ever again. Deonna Purrazzo comes in at the start of 2024, gets a series of wins, puts on a very good rivalry with Timeless Toni Storm ahead of Revolution, loses to her in Revolution. At least they gave her a follow-up feud with Thunder Rosa after
which was
that,
also great.
Which was also great. And then after that, they have not used her properly since then. And like, trust me, I'm just giving you them as the example. It can get worse. Give you exhibit B, Camille. So, like, I'm not even going to go into that one. This is getting ridiculous at this point. Tony Khan's not going to be able to sign, and he named female talent because of how he has treated and booked these women. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous at this point. Like, if you're not going to use them on AEW television, then Deonna Purrazzo should be a challenger for Athena on ROH TV. But you should be using them on AEW television because it's a strong act. You got Taya Valkyrie, who was the longest reigning TNA Knockouts World Champion of all time. Deonna Purrazzo, a 3-time TNA Knockouts World Champion. Doesn't make any sense.
Like one of the most dominant women's champions in the modern era. Like truly, Deonna Purrazzo, like built from the ground up with a bunch of hard work and dedication. And it's so weird because they didn't even get it a chance to get going. Like they did a bunch of vignettes and then did nothing. How do you do that many weeks of vignettes to do nothing? It makes no sense. And SP3, like we talked about the dangers of what would happen to the women's division with Rampage. I was yesterday on the post show. I was like, you know, they knew Samoa Joe and Nick Wayne wasn't going to happen. What did they fill that time with? Certainly not another women's match. Couldn't have had Marina Shafir squash someone. Of course not. Like it's so frustrating because what you get is this very loaded top of the division and no room for everyone else. There's like Willow and Chris and Mercedes and your world title picture. Jamie Hayter and Julia Hart did a good job adjacent, but like, man, it feels like you can't get out of the loops on your title pick. Like there's nobody, you can't build up anybody else for contenders. That's why Mariah May's reign has suffered so much, was they weren't building other people to face her. Nobody else was getting wins on television because they don't have to put any other damn women on television. It's like, oh, Anna Jay had a win last week. Throw her in with Mariah May. That's the extent of how you're booking the women's division. You cannot build up adequate contenders. That's why with Mercedes Moné, the match with Chris Statlander, especially the second one, If you told me that's your favorite AEW women's match of all time, I would not argue with you. But you know why it happened? Because they felt like doing another match. There was not, it was because there were no other contenders being built up there. It's so frustrating and solvable. It is so fucking embarrassing in 2025 to get on podcast after podcast, week after week, and talk about that we can't even get to one damn women's match an hour. It is so ridiculous. So ridiculous.
Especially with the women's roster that they have. Like, just naming the women that you did have that they only are the only women that they really use, which is Mercedes, Mariah, Tony, Willow, Chris. Basically, anyone who was in that casino gauntlet 2 weeks ago, that's the women that they use in the company. They don't use anyone else outside of that. Those are really the women that they use right now. And you could get two matches on an episode of Dynamite with just those women alone and with the women that they also have, probably jobbing to those women. You could get two women's matches out of that. They just choose not to.
It's Queen Aminata. They don't know what they're doing with Queen Aminata. They don't know what show she's on. Like, the most up next ready-made star. They don't know what to do with. She's not in a storyline right now. One of the most universally agreed, like, that woman has everything. Do something with her. She just has matches sometimes. It's ridiculous.
They have arguably the best women's wrestler currently paid by Tony Khan on the third promotion in front of 10,000 people on this on Honor Club. So I like I've literally been doing this AEW Dynamite review with Jimmy Bakaram for, I believe, going on 4 years now. And since like 2021, even when AEW was on top, he told me that Tony Khan was not a good booker. And I didn't believe him. I was like, no, it's good. It's good. We're good now. And then in 2022, I was like, I'm starting to see some stuff. Then 2023, I was like, you make some good points. 2024, last year, I was just like, you know what? He's not. Now, 2025, I'm just like, I'm numb to it at this point. I'm just like, it's not going to change. It doesn't matter how much I talk about it, how much any of us talk about it. It's not going to change.
It's frustrating because there were some parts of 2024 that were so good, but it bottomed out so hard. And it's so disconnected because the good stuff is the best stuff and the bad stuff is unspeakably bad. Like, it is so bad.
I've never seen anything like it. Like, people don't understand. People talk about like WCW, and a lot of people that talk about WCW did not live through WCW. But like this is like watching an AEW Dynamite episode, like watching Dynamite last night, and you get Will Ospreay and Kenny Omega teaming up like they're Batman versus Superman, and they just realize that their mother's names are Martha, and they team up together and fly off of large stuff onto the Don Callis family. It feels like they're the two biggest stars in the promotion. That feels like WCW in 1997. Then you got freaking 56-year-old Jeff Jarrett walking out here, and it feels like WCW into 1999, 2000. Like, it's just like, whoa, the tonal shift. Like, the first 30 minutes of Dynamite, I was riding high. I was like, Hurt Syndicate come out. We hurt people. We hurt people. I'm, like, having a good time. And then Jeff Jarrett came out. I was like, oh. All right. Swerve's back. Swerve's out. Ricochet's out. Oh, we back. Yeah, we back. We having fun. Oh, Death Rider.
It feels like eight different people are running the show. That's how it feels to me. Of like, some of them are great at their job and some of them are really bad. But I don't know, man. It's bizarre. It's bizarre. And with the women's division too, I kind of understood it a little more in the beginning because they didn't have the depth they do. Now it's like unspeakably.
There's no reason.
Like, ridiculous. Especially, is Penelope Ford healthy?
She was being used. They had a whole month where she was being used, and then ever since the end of last year, they haven't been using her.
It's very weird that she had like this big comeback. I feel like she would be such a perfect fit for the Vendetta. Like, she would slide into that so well, but they would have to use the Vendetta for that to happen.
They would have to use the Vendetta. I mean, I got asked, I think Rick Uccino was writing something for Sports Illustrated, and he asked me, did they ever follow up on the Penelope Ford and Harley Cameron thing? And I was like, you know what? It's the first time I thought about that.
Yeah. No, they didn't. The answer was no, they did not.
One or two shows, and then they do that all the time. It's like, why should I get invested in stuff? Why should I get invested in the vendetta and the vignettes if this is how they're going to be used? Why should I be invested and talk about, oh, what a great moment, Private Party winning the tag team titles, or it was, if that's what their title reign was going to be? Like, this happens way too much in AEW.
It's weird because yesterday I felt like was a really productive episode, and they pivoted in some spots that they crucially needed to. And I thought that was really good. But it also just feels like, I said this to Alex Pulaski a while ago, like watching that show sometimes is, it's like, okay, we have this story. We could go either in A, this direction, B, that direction, C, chocolate, or D, that direction. And they choose chocolate. Like, they choose something that makes absolutely no sense at all. And it's maddening because it feels like the answers are right there. The Moxley stuff is like, man, when they started this, I was so excited for it. And they were talking about like stomping out the egos of young guys. And I'm like, you, 3 weeks of kidnapping the Express is what you're doing with these guys. Like, they look like the Sticky Bandits from Home Alone. They do not look like killers. I'm not intimidated by them. They look goofy. I'm over it. But let's get back to this episode of ROH.
It is insane, though, that the Blackpool Combat Club was really cool.
The coolest.
They were the really coolest. Cool. No, they're the Death Riders, and they're not.
When they were like the Death Riders that were driving through the desert and this stuff all started.
That was awesome. Yeah, that was cool. Me now.
Okay.
That was cool. And they just completely
lost its way so hard.
Have lost the plot. They need to just, and this is the thing, and you understand, I'll make a baseball analogy because I know you're a baseball fan. But you got this guy coming up. You got somebody facing the Yankees, and they have a great fastball, but they know Carlo's gonna hit that out the park. So they switch it up and they do the curveball and they get out Carlo. But then Judge comes up, and they know that their curveball is going to hit that out the park. But they still throw the curveball because it worked over there. They're still gonna go to throw the curveball, and Judge, he knocks it out the park. You're telling me you can pivot on Carlo, but you can't pivot on Judge? You're telling me you can pivot on MJF and Double J after that awful segment last week, but you can't pivot on the Death Riders after 3 months of it not working?
I mean,
that's insane. That's insane. I'm sorry. That has bothered me for 24 hours now.
It's bad and it's repetitive, so it's the worst of both worlds. You know what I mean? Like, it's yesterday I was like, Adam Cole's going to lose, and then one guy is going to come down to even the numbers game and they're not going to be able to. And that, like, it's bad, and I know what's going to happen, so it's even worse. I'm always rooting for Jay White because I think he's great. I've never rooted for somebody harder than I'm going to be rooting for that guy at Grand Slam. Like, He's the only one
that looked good out of that final segment, because even though he got beat up in the end, he was the only one that came out and tried to help. And he only the numbers only got to him because they low blowed him. So I was like, at the end of that, I was like, yeah, the only one who looked good in this was White. Copeland looks like an idiot who stayed for the Death Riders to come out and jump him.
He is a part of a trio of two guys who like were nowhere to be found or whatever because they were backstage all beat up. Like, you cannot be surprised that these guys are going to attack you backstage anymore. You cannot be surprised that they're going to ambush you. You cannot be surprised by this. It drives me crazy.
If they're going to attack if the Death Riders are going to attack them, Tony Khan, you should probably show the Rock and Roll Express backstage to establish that, because like, I know so many people that messaged me like, who was that the Death Riders attacked? Because they did not know. Well, like, I know they said it's the Rock and Roll, but like, you need to establish that.
They said that they were at an autograph signing earlier in the day or something, I think.
But it's so passing. And if you're like me, you don't listen to the commentary.
Well,
commentary is not good. If it's not Nigel or Ian on there, it's not really good.
Now that Taz is back, I listen a little bit more. But it's also like, why are they doubling down on beating up Express? Like, that makes no sense. That makes no sense, but
you guys just did this.
I'm like, why are you they don't work here, man. Like, they're a million years old and they don't work here. Like, they're not, they didn't take up screen time for you to be mad about. Like, it's bananas. It's bananas. But let's work through the rest of this episode of ROH. We do have our throwback match, which was an international challenge in 2006. Very fun to see a young Shingo Takagi, Blood Generation out there versus Daniels and Sydal, which was nice. We saw this duo get called back a lot to at the beginning of ROH when they were building out that brilliant, brilliant, brilliant program that they never paid off with Samoa Joe and Zack Sabre Jr. and those TV titles. But nice to see a little nod to CD here, and fun to see a young CD and a young Shingo, honestly. It was very, very fun. Any thoughts on this? Were you there for this?
I was not there for this. This was back when I was just getting the DVDs and everything.
But this is how it feels.
This is where my fandom of Shingo Takagi started. Like, when he comes to like New Japan Pro Wrestling in 2018, this is my knowledge of Shingo Takagi, because I wasn't really an active Dragon Gate watcher, but I was an active Ring of Honor watcher, and he was such a one of the bigger stars from Dragon Gate that were a part of Ring of Honor in 2006, 2007, 2008. So I love this throwback, and it was a great match. It still lived up. My friend was over here, and he was like, "Man, the crowd is going crazy." I was like, "They don't make crowds like this anymore." Like,
no.
None of these independent shows, people can tell me, "Oh, independent wrestling is hot again," but I don't know if it'll ever be as hot or sound like it did for this.
No, I think GCW about this time last year was pretty close. Like, that felt like the lightning in a bottle feeling. But there's something really special and loud about this period of ROH, because it was so accidental. Like, it wasn't supposed to work this well, I don't think. But very, very fun to see them in their younger days. Very cool. But I regret to inform you I'm over the Outrunners. I just kind of am. It's probably because they're not working on anything consistently. Like, they're such great characters, and when they're not in a story, they're just kind of two throwback guys that do a lot of power slams. So, like, they need to be in something that is extremely story-driven, I think, for it to work. And then they shine, because it's what they're best at. But they defeat John Cruz and Rosario Grillo with the Total Recall on Cruz. There was also no real reason this match was happening, so that doesn't help. But it did happen, so we're here to talk about it. I just feel like with the Outrunners, I hate to do this, but I'm gonna do it. So deal with it, all of you. I feel like when you have an act like the Outrunners, and I feel like people naturally compare them to MXM because there is a common thread of being extreme silly gooses, and that's fair. But MXM has work rate stuff that allows them the versatility to adapt to their opponents. So when you have like a one-off, they can still tell you a pretty good story, and it goes above the double entendres. There's in-ring storytelling that happens with their relationship that makes those matches feel fresh and different and new. With the Outrunners, when you get a one-off, it just kind of feels like, oh, they're doing their thing that they always do. And I don't feel like they can adjust as easily, because the thing that they do is that they're trapped two decades ago, what a different time period. So it feels like they wrestle to the style of the character. But for me, that gets boring, because that was a very boring style of wrestling, in my opinion. So I like them when they are in something, but stuff like this, I was like kind of tuned out, honestly. I was like, oh, there they go. They're doing the thing that they do.
And it wasn't a very well-wrestled matchup. So, yeah, I can understand where you're coming from as far as this goes. I can understand where you're coming from as far as general. The Outrunners are not going to be for everyone. Honestly, what the Outrunners are is what basically the heels of WWE call Jey Uso. They're a mascot. They're a company mascot. They're the company mascot for AEW right now. I guess that's the role that they have put them in. Since it doesn't seem like they're going to be in any tag team title mix of any kind anytime soon. So, yeah, they're just a company mascot. They work their character. They work their gimmick. They do the 80s moves, the power slam, the punches, the you son of a bitch, and all that good stuff. So that's what they are. They are what they are. And if you like work rate and all that stuff, that's not what they're going to offer.
I like them in specific situations. This was not one of them. And to your point, I don't think it was like the best match either. So that doesn't help. But guys, we're coming down the home stretch. The TNA show was a banger. They're going to be talking about it after this. We do have one more match to talk about. So get in your super chats and your humper chats if there's anything else that you want to throw on here. I also just want to say thank you to everybody that supported the Fightful Awards. I was promoting it heavily at y'all's faces for a very, very long time. And it was a really special night that a lot of people put a lot of hard work into. It's always so cool that talent take the time to give us acceptance speeches. I think Harley Cameron stole the show this year alongside maybe Drew McIntyre's as well. RJ's is always a cut up, but those are really special nights. And it's something that I know Sean takes a lot of pride in, how those awards look, and we invest a lot in it. So when you guys invest in us, it really does mean a lot. So Matthew Hooks is in the chat right now. He sponsors us on Tuesday nights too. It's a really nice thing because we just kind of pause and appreciate wrestlers and wrestling. And it's not like, can you believe that this happened at this place and booking here and whatever. It's just appreciating great wrestling and great wrestlers. So thank you to everybody that supported that. This is the most I've been involved in it. And it means a lot, especially when creators are the ones that sponsor us, because people that are creators or small businesses themselves or whatever, bothering to spend their money on us definitely means a lot. But thank you for that. Leave a thumbs up on this video. We're wrapping up here with the Gates of Agony defeating Teriyaki and Joey Lucas. With that spine buster on Lucas. These two guys are great, and they feel like they're in a holding pattern. Felt like they were going for a title shot because they were referencing how they were undefeated for so long. I understand why the six-man titles aren't around. I don't like it, but I get it, because one of the Von Erichs is injured. There's no excuse for the tag titles not to be around. None. Sammy Guevara is available. Dustin Rhodes is available. They're not really doing a ton on AEW. The tag division has more going on than the men's singles division. Like, what are we doing? There's only tag teams around. There's tag teams and Lee Johnson. That's it. That's the extent. And whoever is going to be facing Lee Moriarty next. So I was glad this was a very quick win. They beat the hell out of them very quickly. But they're kind of underrated. And I feel like after Cage of Agony fell apart, they haven't really gotten proper follow-ups, and I don't want them to get lost in the shuffle, because I think they're really good. And if the tag titles were around, this tag division could actually be something really special with MXM, GYV, The Righteous, Iron Savages, The Infantry. Like, there's all these really great teams around, and they're fighting for nothing right now when they could just simply be fighting for something. So that's a little bit annoying, but I love watching them. They have such a cool presence about them, and they're in-ring badasses, but this was a quick win for these guys.
Yeah, quick and easy enhancement win. It was more to set up their matchup with the Hounds of Hell tomorrow on Collision. I really like Khan, especially when he shows off his speed running the ropes like he did against Teriyaki here. He just shows off that he's got that nice little next boost to him in his speed in the ring. So it was really fun to see that. And Toa Leona just got the power and the explosiveness. So they're such a good team. I do agree with you. They feel very underrated on AEW TV. They always get something, and then it's immediately kind of taken back or taken a step back, whether it be the Cage of Agony, whether it be any of the opportunities that they got in Mogul Embassy or anything like that. So yeah, I want to see more for them. I want to see them get an opportunity to kind of spread their wings a little bit. And I like the fact they were given some promo time on Collision last week to set up the matchup with Hounds of Hell on Collision this coming week. So looking forward to that match. I think it should be a lot of fun, and they do match up well with each other, especially Brody and Buddy with Toa Leona and Bishop Khan. So some good stuff, some good matchmaking there by Tony Khan. So we'll see what happens on Saturday.
Yes, we will. And almost 4,800 of you watching right now. So what I'm going to say is, if you guys don't want your matches to go so quick, if you're not looking for a squash match, if you're not trying to get in and out so fast, you know what I mean?
My friends, you know we always care about your performance at Fightful, and we want to keep that performance at a main event level. And you can with Blue Chew and the code Fightful. The same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in a much more affordable option. Blue Chew is ready whenever you are or whenever you're not. Helps give you that extra motivation. That way you can make sure that your performance is at a championship level. You go online to BlueChew.com, and when approved by our online physicians, you get that confidence, you get that performance, and you get it shipped straight to your door. No awkward conversations with the doctor, no waiting in line at the pharmacy, all that stuff. Use that code Fightful, get your first shipment free. That's how confident that they are that they're going to make you confident. What do you have to lose? BlueChew.com and the code Fightful.
Well, there you go. Make your matches last a little bit longer with Blue Chew. You actually don't even need the code Fightful anymore. But that wraps it up on the ROH side. We're going to bring on Joel and Cresta. There's been a lot of buzz around the TNA side of things. So excited for them to join and give us a little glimpse of what they're going to talk about on the post show here. Cresta getting herself situated, looking so pretty back there. But we'll bring her on now.
I'm good to go. I'm a psychopath. Hi.
Hi, pretty. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I am sports. I was sports entertained by TNA. I have lived long enough to be a TNA faithful to, wow, this is so TNA. This is, this was so bad to the point. I was like, holy shit, this is sports entertained. This was I was sports entertained by the very there were two very TNA things that happened.
And you watched some wrestling tonight, not just wrestling. You watched some wrestling. Yeah.
Wrestling.
The quote tag, this was camp. This was camp positive and this was camp derogatory. And I lived for both of it.
Did either of you smash your replica digital media championships with a sledgehammer?
No, because I am not divorced and I will not be giving up titles in the divorce.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well,
I literally just saw that on my Twitter.
I famously
feed.
Am not married.
Which I won't lie. I won't lie. That was very TNA of
that
them.
Was so TNA.
That was the best pivot they could have possibly done.
Yes. And
I am very excited that Mance gets his shot in TNA. Mm-hmm. He deserves it. And working with Steph DeLander, the chemistry is there. They have that going. I'm a fan. It's much better than what they originally planned. This is good.
Well, I will simply believe you.
Hey, speaking of believing,
I will simply believe you.
Will
it's
you
amazing.
Believe? No, I need you to believe that if you're sitting front row and someone gives you a sign, you don't always have to accept it.
No.
I have to tell
especially
you.
Especially brother in the green shirt. Come on, man.
Can I talk to
small,
you?
Small part of me, SP3, was like, is that SP3's brother? But no, I know.
Oh, don't do that. Don't do that. He is my brother. He is my brother. Not anymore. Not anymore.
He was my brother, but he's not really for the brothers, my brother. So he's not my brother, my brother.
I am taking back his black card.
I will
here,
say
here's though, his line. Let me get your black card for the sign.
Not
here
the ribbon.
There you go.
His face did look like Wyatt. His face looks like he's not excited to be holding that sign, though. Like, his face looks like, why are they passing these out?
No.
I didn't know it said that on the sign.
Because I know that context is king, my friends. I think everyone should know that the reason that that person is reacting that way is because they cut to that shot after Tessa had taken a shot at the San Antonio Spurs being a subpar basketball team.
Well,
context matters.
Then I've got nothing for that guy then. But shout out to Jordan Grace for wrapping up her career and making the funniest move of all time after all.
Did you see her Instagram? Because that was comedy.
It was incredible the way that she really embraced nearly everybody in that moment.
Bring it in, everyone. Bring in, not you. Bring it in.
Yes, not you.
The person with the biggest arms. She's
yeah. She could hug the physical space of the locker room if she wanted that. Yep.
this is a family thing. Say obviously, yes.
The specter of been, Bob Backlund was making her safe that day. He's all right, but
just six years of hugging needed to get done that day.
Someone said, "Why does the other guy look like evil Ian Riccaboni?" I don't not see it, but I don't totally see it, but I don't not see it. You know what I mean? Like, if that guy had a head of hair and a bow tie on.
You're talking about the guy holding the sign in the middle?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what we're saying.
It looks like Ricky Starks' dorky cousin.
It kind of looks like a
not Ricky Rocky Starks.
Rocky Starks.
My little brother Rocky Starks over here. My brother Rocky Starks.
Rocky Starks, my brother.
Well, we will let you get to it over here. I was going to try and come up with a cute name like Fraxium has, like, but Joelsta? Kroll?
Team Joelstar. If you watch JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, everyone is Joseph Joelstar, so we are Joelstar.
I'm in.
Yeah, they did give us that years ago.
I like it.
Yeah.
I'm in. All right, well, we will get out of here and let you guys get to it. Stay tuned. I had a much more exciting show than we did.
No, you know, par for the course.
Enjoy, thanks. Guys.
Thanks, pals.
Hey, football fans. BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.